This is Cuerpo Politica, a podcast about reproductive health, politics, and justice in Latin America, funded by the Institute of Latin American Studies and co-hosted by me, Dr. Rebecca Ogden, lecturer in Latin American Studies at the University of Kent.
And me, Dr. Rachel Sanchez Rivera, postdoctoral fellow in sociology at the University of Cambridge. Cuerpo Politica explores reproduction in Latin America through a series of conversations with activists, practitioners, artists, and researchers working in many different contexts. Latin American countries have some of the world's most contentious reproductive health laws and policies, and there are persistent challenges facing the quest for reproductive justice.
In these episodes, our conversations with experts will explore contemporary issues, such as those relating to abortion access and obstetric violence, as well as histories of reproductive politics in the region, from the relationship between empire and reproduction, eugenics, 20th century fertility control measures, and beyond. In many of the episodes, we consider culture as a lens through which to understand these contexts, exploring how cultural norms, as well as media and the arts, shape the political, legal, and social realities of reproduction and vice versa.
Follow the podcast on Spotify, iTunes, or wherever you access podcasts, and get in contact with us via our social media at Cuerpo Politica on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Elba F. Orozco Mendoza holds a PhD in political science with a specialization in political theory from the University of Massachusetts Amherst. She's an assistant professor of political science and women and gender studies at the University of Connecticut. Dr. Orozco Mendoza teaches courses in comparative political theory, political violence, decolonial feminism, Latin American politics, and democratic theory, among others. Dr. Orozco Mendoza was a 2020 junior faculty fellow at the Institute for Citizens and Scholars. Her work has been published in Theory and Event, New Political Science, the Journal of Latin American Geography, and Philosophy and Global Affairs. Dr. Orozco Mendoza is currently working on a book manuscript where she theorizes the concept of the maternal contract. Thank you very much. So firstly, thank you for being with us today. We're very excited to talk about your work and particularly its intersections with reproductive justice. I was wondering if we could start with you telling us like more about your research on femicide in Ciudad Juarez, and if you could explain what you mean with the description of the landscape of Ciudad Juarez as a counter geography of violence assembled through the memorialization of femicide and forced disappearance victims.
Well, first I want to thank you for inviting me to be on the show. I'm very happy to talk about my work and my research. In a very brief way, I can describe what I do as being interested in examining women's responses to feminicidio or feminicide in Ciudad Juarez. So I am very particularly interested in looking at maternal activism and how the mothers respond to the lack of justice and the lack of interest that the state gives to this phenomena. So basically, I began looking at these manifestations of maternal activism, because when I started to read about feminicide in Ciudad Juarez, basically, I came across with these expressions or these ways of describing Ciudad Juarez as a city of murder or as a femicide machine. Some scholars as well as journalists call or used to refer to Ciudad Juarez as a murder city or as the most murderous city in the world. And so to me, that was an accurate representation of Ciudad Juarez, but at the same time, it was limiting because it showed us only one part of what was happening in the city. And I wanted to also emphasize the stories of those women who were actually resisting the violence and resisting the the expressions of extreme violence against women. So the notion of counter geographies of violence basically tries to highlight the activism organized from the bottom up in order to counter and resist extreme violence against women. And so this notion of counter geography of violence specifically and particularly refers to how people, how women enlist space in order to inscribe in the city expressions that try to convey the meaning that these victims matter to their families, matter to their relatives and friends, but also to the city. So a countergeography of violence in a way describes the mother's quest to have spaces that are organized in a way that they support life and support care for the other, as opposed to emphasizing the disposability of the body. So that's, in a nutshell, what I try to convey with the notion of countergeography of violence. And it's about life, and it's about conveying the message that these victims matter.
Thank you very much for that amazing answer. Like, and while you were talking, I could see that there's a lot of like disciplines like that come to play, like from gender studies to geography, social movements, resistance, et cetera, et cetera. So following up on this, like, could you tell us how you take an interdisciplinary approach to explore femicides by using geography and the study of landscape, but also like political science and decolonial feminisms in your work?
Yes, this is a very important question and one that I have been reflecting on a lot lately. And so I will say that when I started to be interested in better understand the problem of feminicide, it wasn't intentional that I wanted to do interdisciplinary research. Rather, I did my PhD in political science, but more specifically in political theory. If you look at the scholarship on feminicide and maternal activism, you will realize that political theorists are not very much represented in that scholarship. So in a way, that moved me outside the limits and the boundaries of my own field in order to look at what other people were saying in order to understand the problem of feminicide in Ciudad Juarez. So because of that, I started to read the work of geographers. Melissa Wright, for example, is a very important scholar who has written a lot about feminicide, but also sociologists as well as anthropologists and journalists. So I think this is very important in academia because sometimes we are very constrained by our own disciplines and fields. And going outside political science actually allowed me, I see it as expanded my vision. It called my attention to other questions and other aspects of the problem of feminicide that other disciplines were highlighting that were not necessarily so relevant for political science and political theory. So I think being in conversation with other disciplines has enriched my work and enriched the way I approach the problem of feminicide. And I think it's important to be in conversation with others, other disciplines and other fields, because it allows you to ensemble a lot of different methodologies and ideas to better understand the specific problem you are trying to examine. And another aspect of it is precisely that it allowed me to look at methodologies that are not necessarily dominant within political science. So I incorporate ethnography into my work. I incorporate also archival work, and that has enriched the approach, I think, for me to understand feminicide, but also maternal activism.
Yeah, definitely. And I think one of the things that resonated with me is like this idea that like scholars are usually constrained by their own fields and their own like methodologies and and theories, et cetera, et cetera. And I think in a sense, like not only in terms of discipline, but also when it comes to like case studies and national borders and how we're usually constrained by that as well. And it doesn't allow us to see the different transnational connections like from one country to another. And one of the most interesting problematics that are touched upon in your work is Mexico's proximity to the United States. So can you say something about how you approach the role of borders and borderlands in your research, especially the works that examine the context on the U.S.-Mexico border, like Ciudad Juarez and Chihuahua City?
Yes. Well, as you mentioned, borders are very interesting places because they are supposed to be the limits of national sovereignty. But in reality, border spaces share a common jurisdiction, an administrative jurisdiction. They share problems so that in some cases, like the border doesn't actually really limit the boundaries of countries. And so in Ciudad Juarez, this is particularly interesting because as Gloria and Saldúa states in Borderlands, La Frontera, border spaces basically are a third space, and they create their own culture, they create their own dynamics that are interesting to focus and to learn from. And so Ciudad Juarez to me is interesting because there is a lot of phenomena that first we started to observe in Ciudad Juarez, and we saw some of the phenomena that created the kind of problems that later traveled to other parts of Mexico and were identified also in Latin America. So the proximity with the United States in the case of Juarez and in the case of Chihuahua has created a lot of opportunities, but also it has created a lot of constraints and disadvantages. In the sense of opportunities, you have the import of technology, the investments coming to the city, and these are generating jobs. So one way to see the border area, yeah, at least one way in which we see the border spaces in Mexico is that specifically border states are more industrialized than the rest of the country, and they tend to drive a lot of immigration from other parts of people looking for jobs. But obviously you have the downside that the plants and the companies that move to the border actually get a lot of benefits and incentives in the way that it allows them to underpay their workers and basically get a lot of benefits that other small businesses don't have. So also you have another phenomenon that the border areas are places of transit of drugs, transit of goods, transit of people, and so on and so forth. And this generates common challenges for Mexico and the United States. And the problem with this, when we see the border as a limit, is that this allows us to basically portray common challenges as if they were the problem of one particular country, in this case, Mexico. Mexico is often portrayed as a very violent place that needs, and the solution, the problem when you portray Mexico only in terms of violence is that you call for the militarization of the border, which in reality ends up creating more problems. And so I think it is important for people to understand that increasingly the problems at the border are common and need common solutions, but common solutions in the sense that work for the people and incorporate the views and the opinions of the people who are actually living in those places, as opposed to just dictating solutions from the center, which end up intensifying the conflicts.
Thank you very much. I really like this idea of like taking a critical approach, like in terms of like transnational connections and like how we see only Mexico in terms of violence and the limitations of that, especially like in a borderlands like context. And I think it's a way of creating a sense of resistance, like both like in your participants and the way in which you conceive it in your own work, like you decided to coin funeralization of the city. And I was wondering if you could talk a little bit more about that, because in your work, you describe it as a novel category through which to analyze the protests that emerge emerge in Ciudad Juárez and in Chihuahua City to denounce the murder and disappearance of nearly 1,500 women and girls like since 1993. So what function does funeralization play, not only as an act of memorialization, but as a form of social protest?
Thank you for that question. The concept of the funeralization of the city basically was my attempt to understand how activists in Ciudad Juárez were using objects and when were using space in order to counter the narratives from the state, from local, state, and federal officials who were trying to downplay and minimize the problem of feminicide. So for the from the point of view of the authorities, basically feminicide is non-existent or was non-existent, was not an issue. There was always this tendency and continues still until today, surprisingly, there is always this tendency to trying to minimize and downplay the violence that was happening. And so to me, it was very important to see how the mothers were trying to push back against this idea that feminicide is not a problem, is not an issue, by actually put it on like creating objects that put the problem of feminicide at the center of the discussion. And the specific example I have for this is the mother's decision to use the pink cross as a way to represent the murder and missing women in Ciudad Juárez. So I refer to the concept of the funeralization of the city as this mobilization and appropriation of protest objects in order to precisely counter and highlight the culture of impunity that exists at the level of the government. So it is a way of making feminicide visual for people who visit the city and who might come to Ciudad Juárez thinking that this is a land of opportunity, that this is a land of economic progress. And when what you see when you actually go to Ciudad Juárez is all these different manifestations and these different traces that tells you that there is another layer of meaning. And this layer of meaning is the ways in which activists try to visibilize or make visible the victims and bring them back to the present when the narrative is to silence them or to erase them from the public discourse. So I was very much interested in seeing how, for example, sometimes this pink cross stands for resistance and protest, even when the mothers are actually not taking to the streets themselves. So the pink cross, for example, has become the symbol of struggle and resistance against feminicide. And sometimes you see people marching carrying these pink crosses, but there is also monuments that show the pink cross, and everybody knows that this is a symbol of resistance and a symbol of struggle, a symbol of struggle trying to end the culture of impunity and to again to say that the victims deserve justice and that there are people who are supporting the struggle for justice on behalf of the victims.
That is, it's fantastic, mostly because, like, you know, like, even when they're not, like, physically, like, their body is not physically on the street, like, there's always, like, the pink cross there, like, as an act of resistance. And I think that is, like, and you can correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what you call, like, object-oriented ontology. Because, like, we're already talking about, like, mm-hmm. the role of the objects, like, in acts of resistance and, like, feminist movements and, like, when talking or discussing, like, different symbols against femicides and its transnational connections. I was wondering if there are other feminist social movements when you see protest objects like playing a similar role?
Yes, probably there. Well, I think social movements and mass protests in general everywhere use objects. And not only objects, you can see also that social movements and protest activity generates its own culture. Sometimes it is through music. Sometimes it's through performances and things like that. But objects are also very important. And so in the case of Ciudad Juárez, I was looking at the Pink Cross, at graffiti, at monuments, and things like that that are associated with the struggle, the struggle against feminicide. In Argentina, for example, you see that the fight for abortion or reproductive rights, green scarf, is one of those symbols of the struggle for reproductive rights. So there are many, many movements that mobilize these objects. And basically what I was trying to say in the essay on the funeralization of the city was to say, well, let's try to look at activism and agency in a more expanded manner, not only viewing human beings as the agents of resistance and the agents of agency, but rather actually collaborating and cooperating with these objects in order to continue the struggle. So in that essay, I was thinking a lot about thing agency or the agency of objects. And so how like the objects sometimes can amplify the message that the mothers in this case are trying to convey. So the objects amplify that message or extend it over time, even when the mothers are not again protesting on the streets. And so the idea there is that non-human bodies have always participated into this act of resistance. And so the goal was not to think about agency only in terms of the human body, but also how the human body assembles itself with other beings and other entities in order to continue the project of resisting violence, in this case in Ciudad Juárez.
That was a fantastic answer. And it just gave me a lot to think about, especially like, you know, the different transnational connections, because like you're mentioning like different examples and how like every social movement like generates like their own culture, and that culture and different like objects that they use like in order to protest, like they do not come in a vacuum, because like in the case of the Pañuelo Verde, like that has like a long history with las madres de la Plaza de Mayo, etc., etc. So like it has a lot of different references like to different acts of resistance in terms of like gender. So it just like brings a lot of like things together that signify like how like this, like as you said, like the human body assembles like alongside and with and in contention with other things as well. And I was wondering, like, because we're already talking about Las Madres, like let's just like move to like Las Madres de la Plaza de Mayo to Las Madres de Chihuahua, because like there's so much more to say about resistance, like especially in relation to maternity and motherhood. So would it be possible to talk about maternal activism and its relation to public disclosure and the politics of visibility, especially like when talking about Las Madres de Chihuahua?
Yes. So basically, if you see what I'm trying to do in my research is to understand these different layers of meaning, and so understand resistance agency at the in its multiplicity of registers. And so I mentioned before that to me it's very important to look at the message that the mothers are trying to convey when they go to the streets to protest. And it is also very important to actually listen to the mothers, what they say, because that is an attempt to make visible a problem that they are facing continuously. But in the article, Las Madres de Chihuahua and the Politics of Visibility, I was also trying to look and understand what other meaning the public disclosure of the body has. And so in a way, I read the public disclosure or the reflection of the body in its own meaning, not necessarily tied to what the mothers say. Or let me put it in another way. One layer meaning is the message itself that the mothers say when they are conveying their demands, when they are calling for the stop of the murders and saying new namas. That is one layer of meaning. But I was also very interested in what it means and understanding the meaning of what the mothers are doing when they are taken to the streets. For example, if you look at the mothers of Chihuahua, but also other maternal groups, when they are going to look for their children, specifically when the authorities do not mobilize any resources to look for them. So the mothers take to the streets and go to look for the missing relatives in barren fields. In this case, in Chihuahua, they were going to deserted areas and areas where there was not a lot of people around to see if they could find any evidence related to the crimes. And so that in itself, that move to actually go and conduct those searches conveys another meaning. And to me, what that meaning conveys is that these mothers care for the victims. So it is a way of saying these missing people are important to us, but not only are important to us, they are conveying a sense of responsibility for the victims. A culture that is built around the notion of care for the other. And the message there is that we human beings precisely need that care, need not only the care of the mother who tries to look for the well-being of the child, but I think that we can say that one message that we can gather from the mother's act of care for the children is that we need caring institutions. Like, care is not only the responsibility of the mother or the relatives, but we, in order to be able to navigate the vulnerability of our bodies, we need to reconfigure the way we think about politics, the way we think about social organization, and also the way we think about the economic policy around this sense of care. And so to me, the politics of visibility is precisely making visible a sense of care and a culture of care that has the potential to bring to life the importance and the centrality of life over the death that is being produced through extreme manifestations of violence.
Yeah, definitely. And I think like that is major contribution, like this expansion of the conception of care and responsibility, but also like motherhood as like a tool of resistance and critique of the lack of like state and organizations like more broadly. And I think like before we wrap up, I'm very excited to hear a little bit more about your current book manuscript and the concept of maternal contract, mostly because like we're already talking about motherhood.
Yes, the book of the maternal contract tries to build on this research, but particularly after I visited Juarez in 2012 and 2013 and did all this research around maternal activism that was challenging feminicide, I thought that that basically those were the only manifestations of maternal activism. But for the audience who is not very familiar with Mexico, in 2007, former Mexican President Calderón declared the war on drugs. And so that put that act basically launched the country into a period of extreme violence that has affected not only women, men, and many, many families in Mexico. And so instead of seeing less maternal collectives being organized, you see more. And so interestingly, one of the reasons, when I was listening to the mothers who were organizing in order to look for their loved ones, because the state was not doing that, I was very interested in one thing that they kept repeating over and over again, and that was that the mothers were doing the job of the state. And so the maternal contract precisely tries to play around this idea of the social contract, which is, in theory, a responsibility of the state that is not being fulfilled, and who is taking the responsibility for providing that care and that those resources that the state is not making available to the victims and their families. So the maternal contract is a concept that I created in order to name the interest and the incentive of the mothers to get organized collectively, particularly because they one of the things that I have been hearing is that if you launch your struggle against the state, or if you seek justice for victims of enforced disappearance or feminicide or targeted killings, if you do this alone, basically it is more difficult and the struggle becomes almost impossible. And so the mothers saw the need to get organized in order to join resources to accomplish their goal, which was to find the relatives. And so they did this, and they started to form small collectives. And one of the things that they started to do was to look for the disappeared, either in alive or death. And we see many mother collectives actually identifying many mass graves in Mexico and other parts of the world. So that work, that investigative work that in theory the state should be providing, it is the mothers who are actually doing it. And so I'm trying to make sense of these acts of the mothers actually replacing the functions of the state, because they know that they cannot continue living normally if they have a loved one missing. And so the maternal contract tries to launch a critical view of this indifference of the state and how the mothers are assuming responsibilities that are basically associated with the state. So in a way, it is as if the mothers are generating their own structures of support, their own structures of care, precisely the mothers who have never been on the state's radar, and from the point of view of the state, they do not deserve care or justice and things like this. So I hope that I can articulate these different struggles and layers by explaining the concept of the maternal contract, and both looking at this form of collective organization as a manifestation of the violence that the state itself generates, but also as a manifestation, again, of this need to really creating structures of care that are more egalitarian, that are more inclusive, particularly of those people who are most vulnerable.
Thank you very much. Like, I know that I'm speaking like for both Rebecca and I, like we are like very excited to like read this new project about like the layered like critique of the state and like the questioning of like this like very traditional, very political science-y idea of the social contract. It's like I did my undergrad in political science as well, and that's like literally the first thing that they say to you. And like I think you're bringing that into question, like by like following into like this different case studies, like, and yeah, we're both very excited to read that, and hopefully like when the book comes out, like you can come in and like tell us a little bit more about it. And yeah, I think in general, like, thank you very much for this conversation. It was a fantastic conversation that brought together not only like borderland studies, but also like an intersectional analysis of like political science, geography, gender, etc., etc. So yeah, we're very excited to publish this one. Thank you very much.
Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you to the Institute of Latin American Studies, School of Advanced Study, University of London, for generously funding this project.
Thank you for listening to this episode of Cuerpo Política. Join us for a new episode every fortnight and click on the follow button to receive notifications about podcast episodes.